Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show, the weekly internet radio program. It's June 2nd, 2007, and today also we're taping live for The LaRouche Connection, the cable television production, for an hour-long discussion of a very critical topic, that is globalization versus national sovereignty in the world, with a focus on Africa. Why are there the attacks on Sudan? For this discussion today, we are very glad to have in our studio with us three guests, and I begin by introducing them right up front. That is the ambassador from the Sudan to the United States, who's based in Washington, of course, John Ukek Lueth. Welcome, Ambassador.
Thank you for having me.
We also have from EIR News Service, from our Africa desk, Larry Freeman. Welcome, Larry.
Thanks, Marcia.
And from Washington, D.C., from the LaRouche Youth Movement there and throughout the Northeast, Paul Marino. Welcome, Paul.
Great to be here.
I'm Marcia Mary Baker. I'm with the Economics Section of EIR News Service. And with all the tumultuous events in the strategic situation, what we want to do is jump right into the discussion by having Larry Freeman give some opener questions to our ambassador and continue from there. Larry.
Thank you, Marcia. Well, as everyone knows, this week President George Bush came out with a new level of sanctions against the government of Sudan, using the crisis in Darfur as the pretext. And there's been quite a bit of commotion about that. What I would like to have you explain, Mr. Ambassador, is that your press conference on Wednesday at the press club, you said
that was May 30th, I think so, people.
You said that you considered these sanctions a personal insult to you and to what you were trying to do to bring Sudan and the United States closer together. Could you explain more what you mean by that?
Actually, Larry, thank you for asking that question. It is very critical to American people and friends and all the rest of the people of the world to understand that my country has been at war for a long time. And with the help of ourselves, we Sudanese and friends, we were in a situation whereby we want to bring the best democracy in the world in Sudan. And we have started that by ending the war between North and South, ending the war between the government of Sudan and the East, and also signing a peace agreement with the people in the West, which is Darfur. We were being promised ever now and then, you know, big, mighty American always comes in and said, you know what, if you do this, we will do this. First, they told us that when we have a peace agreement, that's to the rebels and the government of Sudan by then, that if there is a peace, you will be rewarded. All the things that were put against Sudan will be taken off. It has been 2 years now. We have made a lot of peace. We have made a lot of progress. We have established a democratic system, and by all these things, the government of the United States slaps on our face a terrible sanctions. That sanctions affects everything in my country. It actually destroys the peace which was built by the rest of the world, including us. It destroys the peace because peace needs constructive development. And when you curtail the economic system of a country, and let me give you one example. There is a large number of people displaced due to the fighting in Darfur. There is a large number of southern Sudanese who have been in all the surrounding countries. 9 countries surround Sudan. These are our neighbors. And there were refugees in those countries for 10, 20 years. They are flocking back to Sudan. Where do they get food? Our most important food, staple food, is sorghum. It's grown in the eastern Sudan in a place called Gadarif, and northern part of southern Sudan in a place called Rank. All this grain is you, American people, when you contribute a dollar or two, and all this money goes there, they buy the grain, they ship it to Darfur, they ship it to the south for the newcomers who have been displaced for 10, 15 years. They don't have housing, they don't have food. And all of a sudden, these guys will say they want to keep the integrity of my country. they are destroying my country by bringing these sanctions, because our returnees, refugees from Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Congo, Democratic Republic of Congo, also Central African Republic, all these guys, people are coming back. They have no food, but these agricultural programs that produce grain, produce wheat, produce sugar, they are now the one targeted by the 31 companies. So where do these people eat? They say that they are putting sanctions on the government. The government officials, the top government officials are about 100. Do they drink tea? They drink high-class coffee, which the poor person doesn't get. Sugar is very important to an average Sudanese. If you go to Sudan today and go to the hospital, surrounding the hospital, you get so many women with kettle. They make tea. Mm-hmm. And then the workers, they come down from where they work, get a cup of tea plus a small piece of bread. Right. And they live on that. You know, when the sugar is not there, the women, which is an informal economy, as we know that, they will lose their job. The people who are hungry will not get a cheap means of surviving. Those who are in the camps, they will not get the bread because these companies are targeted by the sanctions. Those who are far away, they cannot be rich because the spare parts of the train or the vehicles which we have cannot be provided. This is a devastation. You know, what I said is they are crippling my government. They are crippling and killing my people. It's a death sentence to my people. At a time when we really need help so that we build democracy. If we don't get that situation, we will go back to hatred, fight, and all the rest, and we will be square one again. Looking for guns, going back to other countries, I said this, you know, we might go back to Egypt, and you know that Egypt has a large population of refugees who left. They want to come back now. When they hear that there is sanction on Sudan, no jobs. The company will not be encouraged to go to Sudan. No, I see the significance of this thing. It looked like a token to the American administration, but it is not. It is a death sentence to the growing democratic Sudan. This is what they have done to my country, and it is very, very shocking to me. I came here to bring the American people and the Sudanese people together so that they have good relationship. We hope that we will gain from the American people their experience, increase our productivity, because this is the world whereby there is a lot of capital intensive and other labor intensive products that can help my country. This is shocking. I never expected that the American administration will do this, especially President Bush. He knows better, because he signed the Sudan Peace Act. He signed the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. He was involved in it. And he also, as I told you the other day in my press conference, the American money, taxpayer money, has been used in Sudan. Was that just a window washing? I thought the American government and the American people are serious about our situation. But how can you do one thing as if it looks good and then come up with a big slam which destroys the entire work which has been done over the last 4 or 5 years?
Now, I wanted to follow up on that, Mr. Ambassador. You're referring to the Central Peace Agreement, which was signed in February 2005. And this ended 20 years of civil war, or something like civil war, in Sudan between the north and the south. This was a very important peace agreement, which could give them the potential for development of the south economically, especially in terms of vital infrastructure categories. Instead of supporting and nurturing a new united Sudan, which could come out of the CPA, we now have a situation in Darfur where essentially, by the U.S. policies that we're conducting up there, are we aiding the actual rebels and opposition forces in Darfur to essentially attack and overthrow the government of Khartoum?
Exactly, Larry. This is true, because the message it sends to those who are rebels there is to say that, you know what, this government is going to fall soon, and the warlords emerge in Darfur. And that is why, you know, In 2006, May 6, 2006, we signed the Darfur Peace Agreement. And America was central in drafting the Darfur Peace Agreement. Their representative from the State Department, from the think tanks, all those guys that deal with Condoleezza Rice and all those, they were there. And the draft, if there was something wrong, they would have pointed out this is injustice. But it was a pure something that brought people together. The largest group, the Minawi group of the rebels, what they call SLA, Sudan Liberation Army, they signed onto it. And number four man in our power system now in Sudan is from Darfur. I don't see why this Darfur has become a big deal for getting the people of southern Sudan in the comprehensive peace agreement, which is the basis of sharing power, sharing wealth, and making security arrangements. These are the best protocols ever produced by any country which had been at war. Why are these things being ignored? Why should we not stick to what the Americans said? Why is America unilaterally targeting Sudan? The UN has not suggested that we be sanctioned. The African Union, which are working with us, have never been contacted. They have never even condemned us, saying that this is a genocide. It's just making my government and my people thinking twice. Maybe America has something in its mind, something dubious, something which may be terrible to our people. This is what it shows. Otherwise, it is unwanted, it is unwarranted to do this and put us under sanction when we need to be provided and rewarded.
I'd like to now just probably ask one more question under four, because this is such an issue of such propaganda and publicity in the United States. The agreements that were worked out with the former UN General Secretary Kofi Annan in November of last year was that there would be a three-phase deployment of UN peacekeepers to work with and under the command of the African Union troops in Darfur, which is about 7,000. The first phase has been completed. There has been now a reconfirmation that the government of Sudan has accepted the second phase, which is about 3,000 soldiers. And then the third phase of this hybrid agreement with the UN would be an additional 17,000 soldiers. This is now something that's on the table. It doesn't appear to be acted on. What, as a experienced Sudanese diplomat and knowledgeable person, how should the U.S. and Sudan proceed to solve the Darfur crisis?
That is true, and this is one of the puzzles, you know, to the people of Sudan and the rest of the world who are following up what is going on in Darfur. First of all, we have already accepted the first phase. The first phase included military advisors, civilian advisors, and police advisors. They are already on the scene. The second phase, we have already accepted that about 3 weeks ago. Everybody knew that my government has signed onto the second phase of 3,000 support troops from the UN to support the African peacekeeping force. In fact, rather than applauding and saying good things to the Sudan government, we are slapped with a sanction. You know, is that the way? If your son or daughter is in a class and they get an A in a class, don't you even say, oh, this was great? I think America has a different opinion. And what peace they mean is I don't understand. I tell you, the Darfur Peace Agreement is subsidiary and a function of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. The peace in Sudan, the mother of that peace is Comprehensive Peace Agreement, because it includes all those marginalized people to have power. And how do we do it? We do it by this year having a census. This is in the CPA. Census takes place on the 15th of November this year. But if the rebels in Darfur are being encouraged, we are the bad guys, we are being sanctioned, the image to them is that, okay, let us keep on fighting. This giant is going to fall soon. That's what America sends to these rebels. It emboldens them. It makes them a lot more active. They will not accept what we call cessation of hostilities. And cessation of hostilities is what we did when the South came to an agreement. We stopped in October 2002. The North agreed that they will stay in their barracks as they are, and we agreed we will stay in our barracks, and then it allows the dialogue to take place. No third parties came in between us, negotiation started, and then we produced the magnificent peace of document, the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which gave us wealth sharing, power sharing, security arrangements, and so many other protocol for Abyei, protocol for the Blue Nile, Southern Blue Nile, and the Nuba Mountains. These were significant, and we were all proud of it. To me, I thought this thing will provide Bush administration with a legacy. With a legacy when they get out and say, okay, at least we brought the Sudanese, which were at war, together. That could have been, and I think it would have been. But now, Bush administration is self-destructing. It is destroying something that at least we said, okay, we messed up in Iraq, but we brought Sudan together. Now they are going to mess up all over. You know, that is what I see. And I sincerely say this to American people, that you should watch your government, and you have the right, since you have the democratic right to vote or democratic right to speak your mind out, please see and tell them that what they are doing in Sudan is a wrong thing to do. They are encouraging more war. If war continues in Sudan, it will continue in other countries like Chad, like Central Africa, like Congo, and all those things, and the entire Africa will be in turmoil forever. It's time to bring people together, and guns and armies and troops do not make peace. They escalate war. They make people more fighting. Whenever you have more arms and more armies, the other side will also think it is just like an arm race. They will bring more arms. More people will be enticed to be soldiers, to fight. And this is a wrong message to the entire world, and particularly we in Africa, whereby we need roads, we need hospitals, we need schools, we need other things like better education. We need other things like using technology and high-tech thinking, like what we have with the LaRouche Center, whereby things are analyzed and look forward 10, 20, 50 years, what would happen by a simple policy which we provide now. This is what I have in my mind. I think Darfur should not supersede the Southern Sudan, which has been fighting for 50 years.
Thank you very much. I think Paul has a question for you.
Yes, Mr. Ambassador. In your powerful address the other day at the press club, you did a lot to help educate Americans as to what's going on in Sudan. But also, you brought the fact that most of these people do not know who you are, and that you've had a very interesting role in the development of Sudan, formerly as someone who was against the current government and a bit of a revolutionary yourself. So I wonder if you could introduce us to how you came to be the ambassador here.
I rarely talk about myself, but, you know, since you have asked me, I will talk about it. I come from my mom, Mary, and my father, Henry. They were all missionaries. We traveled all over the country of Sudan. In those days, people were not yet, there were no a lot of schools in the early 50s. And that is when I was a youngster, a toddler, probably about 4 years, when we moved to a Dinka area, established a mission. And as a result, I've come to know so many languages, because we stay here today and tomorrow when our job is done, my mom and dad, we move like that. And during those days, that was when the time the British were just left. I have not been to school yet. The British left in 1956. I went to school in 1957. And the war was in 1955, you know, between North and South, so many fighting. I was still a youngster, not even at a kindergarten yet. But by the time we went to a place called Gordim, It started with our church. My father and mother were not allowed to teach religion by the government of Sudan, which was a new one. Also, when the British left, about 800 positions which were held by the British were to be distributed to Sudanese. Out of that, our brothers in the north gave the south only 6 out of the 800. And we said that, my gosh, the British left as our masters, both north and south. And now, the northerners have become our second masters. And they impose on us their ways of doing things, particularly Islam and possible Islam, not necessarily Islam. It was not the only thing that made us angry. And as a result, when I went to high school, the rebels were coming all over from the remnants of 1955 war. They were introducing their revolutionary ideas, how Sudan could be, why we are marginalized, why religion is a factor, and this and that. And I was enticed immediately. Myself, when I was a young man, in all the classes I have been, I have always been the top of my class. And I was so intelligent that my headmaster encouraged me. So I skipped 7th grade and 8th grade. And I went to high school at 9th grade. And let me tell you, that 9th grade, I went to the bush. I went fighting when the war started. And
so how old were you when you went into the bush?
I was 15 years old. I went 15 years old. And that year, I spent a year on the 16th birthday, I was appointed as a lieutenant. And then that was the 6 days war. You know, 6 days war, 1967. Immediately, the Arab countries were attacking Israel. Israel was knowing that there was a war in the south. And I was not one to be picked for training in Israel. Mm-hmm. And when I went to Israel, I was also the top of my class. When I came back, I was in the rank of a captain when that 1972 agreement occurred. Myself and late John Garang, we were captain, you know, the rank 3 stars. And also because of my knowledge, I was put to teach army officers in infantry training center. And that is how I came to the leadership. Because when I was in 1966, we were taken to a place called Central Africa Republic. Mm-hmm. And then we were given courses in French so that we can go to France as a scholarship for refugees. I was the top of the class, and they said, we go to France. I refused. I said, I do not have a country. I have to fight. Those of John Garang left and went to Grinnell, Iowa. While he was in Iowa, I was fighting. And when the peace agreement came, he was just brought because of his education as a bachelor degree in economics, and he joined us so that we have intelligent people in the system. When I came back to Sudan, I wanted to have a degree. So I went to Command and Staff College. I was the only captain to have a master's degree in the history of the Sudanese Army. When the president of Sudan came for our graduation, he wondered, all these guys are colonels upward, and I am the only captain. I said, how can it happen? And they told him that, you know, this is one of our best students. So after I finished a master's in military science, I went back to 1st Infantry Division in Juba. As if you go to Juba, you get that school. I am the top and the first to graduate from it. And I went to school, and I became the top of the school also. So the university said, no, John, you are going to stay with us. We want you to be our professor here, teaching assistant, and then we'll send you abroad, then you teach. When the army heard that, they said, no. You know, we need professors also. We will send him wherever you want to go. In the meeting, they were told that, John, where do you want to go? By then, John Garang was in Iowa State University, and him and his professor, John Timmons. They went and said, you know what? Since we are here, we will go and provide you an admission. And all of a sudden, my admission came, and I was told to leave. I came to the United States and started studying. The following year, then the war restarted again. Mm-hmm. And they know that John Garang was my best friend. You know, when I was in Sudan and he was studying at Iowa State, I was taking care of his family. And we are so intimate. So the government blacklisted me immediately. So it was not warrantable for me to return to Sudan. I would be hanged. I would be killed. And I start doing lobbying activities, going all over, visiting all the refugees in the United States and Canada, and lobbying in Congress. You know, those people, the Democrats and the Republicans, most of them know me because I used to come and stay with them and lobby the efforts of the United States, that we came up with so many important things. The sanctions on Sudan in 1997, I was a part of it. The listing Sudan as a country that sponsored terror, I was a part of it. And also when it came to Sudan Peace Act, I was a part of it until we came with the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. Are my people in the United States? I be with them. You know, I travel all over the United States and Canada. I am also a party to sending Talisman Oil Company away from Sweden. And I went and addressed their stockholders in
Canada,
Calgary.
The Canadian company.
Canadian company. After 6 months, you know, they left Sweden. So my efforts from childhood up to now is freedom in Sudan. My effort is revolutionary. And also, no money can buy me. No money can buy me. I have to work hard to bring this Sudan together. My friend, late Dr. John Garang, worked hard and fought for this. They wrote up this Comprehensive Peace Agreement. I see it my duty to implement it. And I want everybody who is a peace-loving person, be they Americans, Europeans, Africans, Asians, individuals, organizations like La Rouge Center, like other organizations, African Union, to help us in Sudan so that we implement the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. The government of Sudan now is not the previous government. It is a government of national unity which comprises the South, the West, the East, and former politicians and parties. If which government is considered a government of one person, that's not true. It is an insult to me as I say that. I would have not left Iowa State or the Midwest with my kid and said, okay, I'm going back home if I knew that this is not a contract. We have to apply the contract we have agreed upon, implement it, and in the end, this is the process. Elections, after the census, after elections, there will be a democratic government. A government not of one party, but of those parties that have won the right, you know, to rule through elections. Why is America not helping us through that? A few splintering rebels in Darfur are not the cause. It's the policy of mighty America that can shift the board and wreck it. And that is what I am telling the people of America, that watch what your government is doing. You know, self-destruction. I don't want war to continue in my country again. I want peace. And only things that support or help or enhance peace, that is the thing we need now. Not disturbing the poor, not preventing the development of roads, bridges, schools. That is what sanctions does. It curtails all these things. It puts in the eyes of the world, some countries become ambivalent. Some corporations become ambivalent, and they will not go to Sudan. Some individuals, even Southerners and Westerners, who are refugees now or now working in the United States, in Canada, and other places, they say, if mighty America and the rest of the West are putting sanctions, why would I take my children back to Sudan? It's counterproductive. It's not a wise thing to do. I believe the administration should rethink what they have done to my people.
There was a question that came in about these attacks from an Alaskan LaRouche Youth Movement person in Washington, Ian Overton, who asks you the following. He wanted to know that in addition to these straight-out economic sanctions and the threat of war, too, which we hear coming from France, The Sarkozy government is talking about military corridors and with Britain and the United States. But on the so-called opposite side, there is the soft kind of attack, so-called, where in the name of saving the environment of the world and global warming of Al Gore, who held a United Nations, this kind of outlook held a conference in Nairobi, where it's said that there shouldn't be industry or agriculture, that there shouldn't be development, shouldn't be all this infrastructure in the Sud, or you'll ruin the mosquitoes or the liver flukes, or you shouldn't have water management. Do you want to say something about that?
Definitely. You know, I'm an economist, and I've studied this very much, and I know what it means between the developed and developing countries. You know, you guys have everything, you have done them, and now you want to keep us away from doing that. You want to keep us in the darkness. We don't want us to have roads because the forest will be destroyed. When you have destroyed your forest and now have roads, you don't want us to have bridges. Oh, they are going to cause problems. You don't want us to have refineries because soon it will pollute the earth. When you guys are powerful over us now because of all this development you have done before and the forest you have cut down, we will know how to save our world. But we need to develop first so that we become equivalent or close to equivalent. I don't really have a tough opinion about global warming. If it is warmed, why not? We in the third world, we should warm our part also. So that let us see if we go to hell, we go together. If not, then there's no problem. You know, I don't see anything that let me build my power plants. Let me get a nuclear plant to provide me with energy. You know, let me dig my oil, which is there. It cannot come out if I say, okay, it is going to pollute. Why are they telling us that? And they are driving vehicles every day. Every household has 4, 5. You know, in Sudan, you go over 10,000 people, there's not even a single vehicle. This earth belongs to us too. If the West and the developed people think that they have the right to pollute and we should not even make a little dent of polluting so that we come up, you know, that is ridiculous. I don't think that is what we can do.
Can I ask one follow-up question? Because I can't resist. You said you studied at Iowa State, and that's the land-grant college from Abraham Lincoln in the breadbasket here. And Sudan, maybe everyone doesn't realize, it's the biggest country in area in Africa. And you mentioned sorghum. I think that originated in Africa. And grass sorghum as well as grain sorghum is terrific for animals and people. What is your view of, if you had the resources, you're saying should be sent, not sanctions, but resources that you could do throughout the region or Africa?
Oh, definitely. I come from that great country, the Iowa State, the cyclone, where we have the first veterinary hospital in the world. We were those who have established and invented the fax machine, the anthrax from us, the first atomic bomb, all this. I am a breed of a very, very wonderful university. If the American give me this chance, that Sudan, I can develop it in 15 years. Mm-hmm. I can catch up with all the technology I have and the knowledge and my friends and graduates of Iowa State. You know, engineering is our way of life. Engineering changes the life of people. Given that fact, we will develop the south, the north, the east, and the entire Sudan. And by doing so, we will provide the rest of the world with the food. We are the breadbasket of the world. Animal-wise, animal population, nobody matches us. The peanut that Georgia has, the soybeans, the corn and sorghum, they will thrive in Sudan. And when people are threatening us with global warming and telling us to stop, they are going to stop us. They are going to keep us in the 18th century while they are going to 21st century. Give us the chance to pollute a little bit. Give us percentage, you know, a little bit, so that we arrive up. I don't think that is what we should do in Sudan. And I'm proud of being a graduate of Iowa State and also being a graduate from this country. I want to talk to the people that you have a great country. Don't let some people steal your country. Don't let some people drive your country to be hated by other countries. we are one human beings, and we have to work together. And when you spot those guys who are destroying this country, stop them. You have the power using your vote. You have the power speaking out. You have your congressmen and congresswoman and Senate. These institutions are good for you. If you elect good people, you will have good government that will cater for sympathy, humanitarian help, rather than always fighting, and treating on others. Our countries are our countries. We are the children born there. We know what to do with it. We may need help, but not all the time. It doesn't mean that you should rule us. You should not tell us what to do. You may advise us, and when we say no, don't make us enemies.
One question is, why, people ask, why are we doing this to Sudan? That is, thoughtful people. Why are we imposing these sanctions? Why do we have this policy, which is a militarist policy of trying to find a way to get various troops into Sudan to disrupt the functioning of the country? And the question is, I don't think President Bush is the one who initiated this policy. This comes from much higher up. And as we discussed in the opening of the show, there is an effort to carry out a globalization dictatorship in the world. And in Africa, it takes the form of making sure the nations are weak, there are no strong sovereign nation states, and that the resources can be essentially looted and stolen at the cheapest possible price, if paid at all. What I've discussed with Mr. LaRouche is one of the things that we think is behind the Darfur policy is, in fact, to topple or dismember the Sudanese government, and that this would violate the water agreement that Sudan made in 1959 with Egypt, and then this would be used to squeeze Egypt, which depends on that water. What do you think are behind these attacks in Sudan? This is something I think people would want to know.
I believe the leadership of Sudan have become very ambivalent, and they have always said that there is a hidden agenda. That's the, you know, all the things you have just said here, Larry, fits in into what the leadership of Sudan says, there is a hidden agenda. Hidden agenda, there is some powerful organization somewhere that has picked on certain countries in Africa, especially those countries where their leadership has been strong, have been anti any encroachment on their sovereignty. They are the target of that hidden agenda. I do not want to go in details about it. I think they can be summed up by intelligent think tank of this country, and His Excellency LaRouche always goes in details about things like that because he watches from afar and above the rest of the world. As a result, you know, he might be more objective than those guys who are involved in devious arrangements, like Blair and the President of the United States, George Bush. Those guys, I don't know what is in their mind, you know. There is a saying in Africa that, you know, when somebody wants to deal with you, they will say, okay, it is not you, it is the other hill, you know, there are two hills. Like, this is not this hill, it is the other hill, and that hill like that. And also the rat, the mice, when you have eaten something and didn't wash your hand well, do you know what the mice does to you by night when they come, you know, they just say, and then, they, you know, you think that there is something cooling your finger, but, you know, it cuts it until you find out that they've eaten up all your entire finger. So this is what they do. They say, you know what, we are helping you. You know, we are there, here. We are, you know, we are writing this thing up. This here is this and that. This is how you will make wealth sharing. This is how you will make this and that. And in the end, they pump you up with the most destructive bomb in a minute. And you find that it's too late. I don't want to be a part of those. I want to say up front, you are going the wrong way. And those magic things you are doing from behind, people say that are no secret. Everything is sooner or later discovered. Yeah. So we'll discover it soon what is behind all this conspiracy and all this global warming thing and all these funny things, and saying that we are bringing democracy to people, and then that democracy ends up with 600,000 being killed. You know, all these things are a terrible scenario.
Well, I'm sure Paul should ask you something. You got an email from Texas on why this, also raising the oil question on resources in Nigeria or Sudan. You can go ahead and ask him, but you might want to keep that in mind.
Okay, yeah, the question I had was, I guess, in a different vein of the same topic, but on the college campuses among young people, particularly, I guess you could say, more liberal college students, it's very in vogue to say we want to stop genocide in Darfur. And I think the discussion today has helped put a clearer picture for what's actually going on in that country for these young people. But in the reading of the literature, you find that there's a vast propaganda machine that is pumping out this stuff, which a lot of young people have bought into. In the literature I've read, you see that various firms are trying to get contracts from military personnel to be sent there and so forth. So I wonder if you could address the younger college students who will be listening here today and address how they're responding to this situation.
Thank you, Paul. I would like our youngsters there in colleges, in high schools, and future leaders of this country and the entire world, they have to be careful about the consumption of media they get. I know resources are limited and not everybody will go to Darfur to see for themselves or go to Khartoum or Juba to see for themselves what is going on there. I believe most of the people in the United States are being misled because, as I say, I was a fighter against the government that existed before. And nothing could have brought me back from the United States and go back to Sudan if I do not believe in the peace which has been agreed. The situation in Darfur is not a genocide. A genocide is when you get innocent people, not armed, and kill them. This is not what is happening in Darfur. What is happening in Darfur is Darfuris are fighting among themselves. The herders, which are mobile with their cattle, the horses, camels, sheep, and all type of animals. And the farmers that are only living on their land and cultivating grain, sorghum, etc., millet, and those things. As a result, it is sometimes because we have had a large number of animal population. You know, they get medication, veterinary services from all over the world, and animals do not die as they used to die to condition the situation. And you know, if you read history in the United States, you would have seen how the cowboy clashed with the farmers.
Yeah.
You know, read your history and you'll find the same thing. This is what have happened also to my country. It came too late and you cannot believe it because you are so much advanced. But this is what is happening in Sudan now. And I warn you, do not think that what is going in Sudan, the people outside Sudan are not, they are more caring about our people than ourselves. That's not true. These are our brothers and our sisters. Even myself, my cousins are in Nyala, which is southern Darfur. Southern Darfur is very close to my home. That is Awil. We are the largest and the highest population in Darfur. The people from my province or state, called Northern Bahr al-Ghazal State, 570,000, they are in Darfur. Because during the war, they left the south, running to the north. You know? And, you know, they are safe. There are people dying because of the clashes that occur. I cannot deny that. But it's not at a magnitude as it is shown here. You know, we used to fight as clan against another clan. It had you to happen. It's not a new thing. So we know that we should stop that. And we are working to stop that. The administration of the United States should help us in that process rather than escalate it or take side. As I see, the sanctions are on the Sudan government, the institutions of development in the Sudan, but you young people need to know that the rebels have it good. When the rebels have it good, the rebels are going to be fighting and fighting and fighting, and the peace which could have been close is going to be very far away.
Marsha, you had some internet questions from the internet called in?
No, we're getting questions on energy because someone mentioned from Texas, the oil state here,
yes,
that you raised on your May 30th press conference, something about oil.
Yes. I also think that there are a lot of things in Sudan that may be targeted by people who are very much interested in oil. As I told you before in my history, I work hard to evict Talisman Oil Company, a Canadian company, out of southern Sudan. I believe also there is a large reserves of oil in most part of the south and also Darfur. So there is a hidden agenda, and this is why my leadership think that it is our oil which is being targeted. They are going to split us, to make us weak, and then they pick over. They may pick their stooges, like they have done in Iraq. You know, got their stooges, pulled them to war in the pretext that there was weapons of mass destruction that we never got. They even showed us certain things that these are mobile weapon of mass destruction, a fake thing which never happened. They are faking those things every now and then in Darfur. Go and look at the report by the armies and also the UN reports on Darfur and see how many deaths per month. You will not get 50 per month. You will never get 50 per month. And you will always hear that the rebels have hijacked the vehicles of humanitarian workers. And they don't condemn them. The rebels also are being subsidized by some countries. And those countries have the French interests. Mm-hmm. They have oil in that country. And they want to extend their reign to Darfur and probably the entire Sudan. These are the things which are going on. You young people, you lay American people who do not read more than what you are fed by the media, do not know this. I'm here to open your eyes so that you see the other side of the story. You know, this is what I want you to know, especially those you talk about, Paul, those youth who do not who are being drifted away. Don't agree with divestment. Divestment is a way to weaken us so that individually, business people do not get into Sudan. Only they who want to go there are those who are going to go. This is cartelling your freedom. The enterprise they talk of, they don't want it. Just like they did with the Halliburton. You know, the company was not, it was not a tender one. They just picked one person and sent it there. This is what they want to do. Divestment, there is no apartheid in Darfur. These Darfuris are brothers and sisters. They are the majority of the Sudanese army. 70% of Sudanese army are Darfuris. So if the army is killing those, they are killing their own family. You know, they just visualize these things. You don't know them. Come to us. We'll give you more.
Mr. Ambassador, also in the same vein, I wonder if you could also address some of our leaders in Congress. In vogue recently is the word democratization, democratization. Everything is about democracy. And when speaking about Sudan and also Russia and other countries, the Democratic Party, particularly the leadership, has a problem with understanding that often the word democracy is veiled for regime change from the country. So I wonder if you could address this problem with our friends in Congress who need your advice, especially as someone who's taken national leadership before.
I think it is a puzzle to me when people talk about democracy and they cartel countries which are going toward democracy. Democracy means people have to decide their own fate. They have to vote. I don't think what America is doing on Sudan, on Zimbabwe, on other places is a sense of allowing people to be democratic. It's just curtailing our rights, subduing us from our national sovereignty. They do not understand. And if not, I believe they are actually undermining what they say. They speak something, they do the other way. They talk about democracy, they kill democracy by what they do. I let you know this. Why would they stop a process which is already being initiated? As I tell you, November 15, we have census. The UN will do it. United States, volunteer to do it. I don't know whether they will curtail it. Then after that, we will have constituencies. And in 2008, the end of 2008, when you have your presidential election, we will have our elections too. By January 2009, when you have a new president for this country, we also will have a fresh democratically elected body to rule my country. Why are they against it? Why are they putting sanctions on a country that has been fighting for 50 years and in the progress of doing all what they said? The Comprehensive Peace Agreement, United States has its advice in it, its technical know-how has been applied to it. All those things have been applied. I don't think they really want democracy. They want a new imperialism.
Well, one thing you said earlier, Mr. Ambassador, in regard to Paul's question, is on the how the youth in this country have been whipped up around this issue of the four, and the way they've tried to make it stick is by putting this label genocide on it. Now, the notion of genocide is the wiping out of a group of people, a racial group of people. And without this label, it would be very hard for them to whip up the population. But in fact, the genocide is going on in sub-Saharan Africa all the time. You have 5 million children dying before the age of five every year in Africa. You have the situation in the Congo, where literally 80% of the population lives in insecurity. That means they don't know if they're going to live or not, not due to fighting, but due to lack of clean water, health care, and food. So the question of genocide by, I think, the leaders of this Save Darfur is very duplicitous, to say the least. I think many of the young people don't know what's really going on. But the question is, if people, the youth, will really want to help Africa, then we have to fight for something much, a greater vision. How are we going to bring water to Darfur, which is the number one issue? How are we going to bring roads? How are we going to bring modern rail transportation? Do these issues get discussed in when comments are made about Darfur, or is all the so-called concerned citizens about Darfur completely avoid any issue about what's going to benefit the people?
They didn't talk about that. The current administration and the Democrats who are talking, they don't talk about that. They talk about the leadership of Sudan, that they would like to be diminished. They talk about sanctions. They talk about so many other things that are not even looking into important things. In Darfur, what we need is water. And let me tell you, the advertisement that the Save Darfur Coalition does on so-called Washington Falls, $50,000 a day. That $50,000 can build a ranch so that the nomads don't intrude into the farms. That $50,000 can provide wells so that those who are thirsty do not have to die or do not have to go and fight over at a well spot. There are so many things, the money that is collected here. I tell you, I wonder why the president of the Save Darfur Coalition is paid $500,000 a year. Something the president of this country, this great country, does not even get. Condoleezza Rice doesn't get that. So what is the spirit there, young people, when somebody comes and take your dime that they are taking to Darfur and say, in New York, 31 million was collected. Only 3 million reached Darfur. Where is 28? No, this, we must be very careful about what people say. Bill Gates has the right because he came up with a very important product, you know, the Microsoft. You pay Bill Gates the right because of his intelligence, and it is not, what is the intelligence of Save Darfur Coalition? Just to muddle you up and say, show pictures of skulls and, you know, even places where people fought during the time when I was a youth, they are being shown. Do you know where these things come from? They can have come from Rwanda. They could have come from other places. You know, this burning of houses, it could have come even from some part of Iraq, you know. And they show you this and shock you, and you get your little dime and you send, give it to them. Only a penny reaches Darfur. Please be careful. Be wise. See why a particular particular group is the one spearheading this. You know, be careful and analyze and think about what is going on. And I, as the ambassador of Sudan, invite you. I will give you a visa and you walk, put your feet in Darfur and see to your own eyes and come and be a witness.
Marcia, do you have any other questions?
Thank you. No, we're getting towards the end of our time. And I want to thank you by name, although there's a few seconds left. But again, I thank you, the ambassador from Sudan to the United States, John Ukek Lueth, Larry Freeman from EIR News Service, and Paul Marino from the LaRouche Youth Movement, who's leading the charge that the Cheney-Bush regime, with the hidden agendas behind it, should be put out of business. And another expression for what's been happening in your part of the world is it's like the western part of the arc of crisis from Afghanistan, Iran, Iraq, through the Horn of Africa. And this should be stopped. Do you want to add any final word?
Just that we're preparing for Congress to reconvene on Monday, and we're looking forward to bringing these ideas and keeping them on their toes as they try and manage all these problems at the same time.
Cut through the propaganda. That'll be June 4th, this Congress. Mm-hmm. But in closing, I encourage everyone, too, to stay tuned for June 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. On Out of Washington will be a world telecast by Lyndon LaRouche on stopping this globalization, the road to hell. And if anyone wants information, I must give the telephone. In the United States, you can call toll-free 800-929-7566. And, you know, we're weekly. June 9th will be the next LaRouche show. And otherwise, for those on the LaRouche Connection, stay in touch often. Thank you all.
Thank you also for having me.
Thank you, Ambassador,
thank you
for coming.
Thank you very much.
Is that worth it?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, folks, for doing this thing for us. You know, you will be rewarded.
Well, you've already earned a good reputation by your enemies in Washington.